my people get people to move. Me and my people get people to move.
All you mother brothers
trying to get high.
Me and my people get people to move. Me and
one check away from being on the skids.
Me and my people get people to move.
About sums it all up. Let's listen to the most chill Slack Mob, otherwise known as Slack Mob from San Francisco.
Slack Mob from San Francisco. Well, that's it for Critical Mass from Kill Radio.
Kill Radio is
and,
out.
And I'm going to go
until
see...
Until next time.
I'm going to go see Chris and Cozy tonight. Well,
that's it for thanks Critical for listening.
Mass from Kill Radio.
And all you out there.
And I'm going to go see...
Santa Cruz surfs up. Free Radio Santa Cruz coming up.
Time for a mass from Kill Radio.
This is Age of Consigne. Thank you, everybody. Critical Mass rules, rocks, and rocks our world here in Los Angeles. This is Age of Consigne. Thank you, everybody. Critical Mass.
And listen to the Chill Room Saturday nights at midnight.
Our world here in Los Angeles.
That's right, the surf is up these days. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM and freakradio.org, unlicensed pirate radio. Almost 10 years running. We're coming up on our 10-year anniversary on the air without a license from the FCC. And today, the last Friday of the month, it's the Critical Mass Radio Network. Stay tuned for the next couple hours. You'll hear from, more from Ward Churchill, from Ron Anisich of Bad Cop No Donut. Report from the Critical Mass bike ride. We'll be playing Free Speech Radio News at 5 o'clock. And we'll be here in the studio. Daniel-san, Lalo, and Donna from Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM.
Oh my God, arrest that record player!
Call me.
It's code red. If you black, we need green. Know what I'm saying? Michael Jordan, Oprah Winfrey, hit me, hit me. Michael Jackson, Bobby Whitney, hit me, hit me. Magic Johnson, we need about 50,000. Hit me, hit me. Dr. Huxtable, help us build a hospital. Michael Jordan, Oprah Winfrey, hit me, hit me. Michael Jackson, Bobby Whitney, hit me, hit me. Magic Johnson, we need about 50,000. Hit me, hit me. Dr. Huxtable, help us build a hospital.
Hello, patients being invaded is now Wednesday morning around close to 9. So federal marshals are there. If you can get down there, that would be great. Bye.
Fuck the FCC.
Does this feel like a violation of our rights of free speech to you?
Hell yes!
Hi, my name is Sakura Saunders, and I'm with KDBS and KDRT LP. I'm an angel of public interest today for the FCC localism hearing. And basically, the story behind this is a few years ago when Michael Powell. sex workers' rights advocacy.
I understand that time is running out. 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 Running out as hastily as niggas run from the man. Time is running out on our natural habits. Time is running out on lifeless serpents reigning over a living kingdom. Time is running out of talks, marches, tunes, chants, and all kinds of prayers. Time is running out of time. I heard someone say things were changing. Fire in a dry forest, like a murderer from the scene of a crime, like a little roach from DDT, running out like big niggas, run on a football field, run, nigga, screwing your woman,
run, nigga,
whooping your ass,
run, nigga,
stealing your culture,
run, nigga,
taking your life,
run, nigga,
killing your children,
run,
nigga, run like you run, when the liquor store's closing and it's Saturday night, run, nigga, cause time is running, run like time, never yielding or forgiving, moving forward in a direct pattern of progressive movement, never warning or relinquishing time, it's running, 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 running.
You listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. You can listen online anywhere at freakradio.org. Who is this? This is Pam the Functress from The Coup, and we chilling here in Santa Cruz. That's right. Commercial free radio, baby. News and music you can't hear anywhere else. And that's with who? My boy Sandino and Daniel Sun, man. That's right.
Yeah, my views on a lot of things. Or my views, they may be contrary to what other people believe, are the Ku Klux Klan, per se, were not set up by the lower class of Caucasians. The lower class of Caucasians were recruited into the Ku Klux Klan by former rich plantation owners who saw a way to gain some of their property back. And they used prejudice ideas, class ideas, on these ignorant, low-class Caucasians. You know, the act of giving each free slave so many acres of land, and then the Ku Klux Klan scared them off it, you know, You see, these poor whites that was the body of the Klan didn't gain nothing. See? Because the land went back to the rich owner, you know, it didn't go to them. But it's just showing you how a man manipulated, you know, their own people.
Was there much of a presence of the Ku Klux Klan or other white supremacist groups such as that when you were coming up?
Not really. Not in my air. Mm-hmm.
I mean, was there much of a sort of fear that they may show up? Or
no. Uh-huh. No, it was... During that Reconstruction era that my grandfather spoke of, Regulators, they called them night riders and things like that. My grandfather was a farmer, and he was nobody's pushover. My mother's father, and he was the type that would resort to violence to protect what was his. And so they tried once without success, and so they end up leaving them alone. And as a cliche, if they cannot handle you, then they label you. You know, he was a crazy nigga. So they just they left him alone.
Free Radio Santa Cruz. Yeah.
I don't wanna write this down. I don't wanna tell you how I feel right now. I don't wanna take no time to write this down. I don't wanna tell you how I feel right now. Hey, tomorrow may never come for you or me. Life is not a promise. Tomorrow may never show up for you and me. This life. Trying to do the best that I can with what it is I have. I ain't no perfect man. I'm trying to do the best that I can with what it is I have. Put my heart and soul into the song.
Yes, yes.
I hope you feel me from where I am to wherever you are. I mean that sincerely. Tomorrow may never come for you and me. Life is not a promise. Tomorrow may never appear. You better hold this very moment very close to you
right now.
Very close to you
right
so
now.
So close to you
right now.
And first, I would like to say that I'm speaking not for myself, but as a follower and helper and representative of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who is the spiritual head of the fastest growing group, religious group, of black people here in the Western Hemisphere. And when we give our views, we don't give them as a civic group, we don't give them as a political group, but we give them primarily as a religious group. And any solution that we set forth, we absolutely feel that it's a religious solution rather than a political solution. One of the reasons that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, in teaching us here in America, is giving us a solution that differs drastically from the sit-in movement, he's trying to make us men. Now, the very fact that You find students all over the world today are standing up for their rights and fighting for their rights. But here in America, the so-called Negro students have allowed themselves to be maneuvered under a tag of sit-in. The word sit itself is not an honorable tag. Anybody can sit. An old woman can sit. A coward can sit. A baby can sit. Anything can sit. But it takes a man to stand. And when they attach this sit-in term or title to this movement, it stigmatizes it. It stigmatizes it, in my opinion.
Is this the passivity of it that you object to?
Well, that actually, I guess it describes it. The name describes its nature. It's a passive thing. And also, we feel that to try and sit down in another man's restaurant to drink a cup of coffee is insane. If I were in the South and a Southerner didn't want me to eat in his restaurant, and I forced my way in and then let him go back in his kitchen and prepare some coffee for me to drink, I'd consider myself insane to drink it. We don't think that that's the solution. We feel that rather than to force our way into someone else's restaurant or public place that they have established, that we should get our own. Once we have our own, we're respected for the fact that we can create our own. And that's equality right there. Thirdly, we feel that the sit-in movement actually represents a new Negro in the sense that it represents dissatisfaction. It shows that the new generation here in America of black students have lost the fear of the white man that our parents had. 20 years ago, the average so-called Negro, if he was dissatisfied with something, the degree of dissatisfaction that he would show would be tempered or controlled by his concern as to what the white man's attitude would be if he showed that he didn't like it. And the sit-in movement, the good part of the sit-in movement, in my opinion, represents the fact that there is a new generation of so-called Negroes who are dissatisfied. And the fact that they will go into these places shows that they differ from their parents in that they have lost fear of that obstacle that their parents feared. Now, I think that the white man realized when the sit-in movement first started that it was a dangerous thing. And in my opinion, the way he has captured it and controls it right to this day, he put the same leaders that formerly had kept the Negroes walking along a patient, passive road were jockeyed into a position where now they are the advisors to these students. Being accepted by the students as advisors, the student sit-in movement, in my opinion, has lost its militancy to the degree that it has accepted advice of these preachers and politicians who usually are for their own personal benefit rather than for the masses of black people on the whole. And I would like to say in conclusion on that point that if a man is going to have his tooth pulled, the pain that he receives from the extraction will make him manifest a violent reaction. Pain automatically makes a person resist or put up some form of action to defend himself from that which is causing him pain. But to keep a man, in order for the dentist to be able to handle the patient, he puts Novocaine in the patient's jaw. And though he's still extracting the tooth, this Novocaine makes the patient think that nothing is being done to him. And I think that the student sit-in movement shows that the black people here in America finally became so overburdened with pain that they were about to display some violent reaction to all of these injustices. And to keep this down, I think that the powers that be maneuvered these Negro preachers and other politicians into a position to advise these students, and it was just like injecting Novocaine into them, and their militancy today, again I say, is displayed according to the degree of advice they accept from the older leaders.
Would you agree that their goal is a worthwhile one?
If their goal is integration, it's not a worthwhile one, but if their goal is freedom, justice, and equality, then that's a worthwhile goal. If integration is going to give the black people in America complete freedom, complete justice, and complete equality, then it's a worthwhile goal. But if this word that they've invented, integration, and as I mentioned, the Novocaine that is put into the patient's jaw, in this sense, it would be integration. Just the holding this integration bottle, dangling it in front of the Negroes in America today, has actually disabled them, or it has nullified their ability to stand up and fight like a man for something that is theirs by right, rather than to just sit around and beg and wait for the white man to make up his mind that they're worthy to have this type thing. I think that this is, in my opinion, why we disagree with the sit-in movement. If they are willing to wait for another 100 years for the white man to change his mind to accept them as a human being, then they're wrong. But if they're willing to lay down their life tonight or in the morning in order that we can have what is ours by right tonight or in the morning, then it's a good movement. But as long as they're willing to wait for the white man to make up his mind that they are qualified to be respected as human beings, then I'm afraid that all of their waiting and their planning is for naught. As Thurgood Marshall said on New Year's Eve, the Supreme Court brought about the desegregation decision, I think, 6 or 7 years ago, and there is only 6% desegregation in America right now. We don't call black students going to University of Georgia integration, nor do we call four children, black children going to school in New Orleans integration, nor do we call a handful of black students going to school in Little Rock integration. If every black man in the state of Arkansas can't go to any school he wants, that's not integration. And if every black child in the state of Louisiana cannot go to any school that they are qualified for in the morning, then that's not integration. And likewise with Georgia and any other state in America. It's no integration with us until the entire thing is given, is laid on the table, not 100 years from now, but in the morning. And at the rate that the NAACP, CORE, and the Urban League is willing to accept the change of attitude in the white man's mind, we who are Muslims feel we'll be sitting around here in America for another 1,000 years, not waiting for civil rights or something like that, but even waiting to be granted the rights of a human being.
Mr. McCullings, do you feel that your movement has been emasculated the way that Mr. Malcolm described it?
Quite on the contrary, Mr. Donald. The first thing I'd like to point out is perhaps many people have been quite uninformed as to the start of the movement and the reasons for the movement. Many people seem to get the idea that this movement started as a result of somebody coming in and organizing and saying, this is a way that we can achieve full integration. So why don't you students get together and do thus and thus? The situation is quite on the contrary. The movement started in Greensboro, North Carolina, with a young man from Washington, D.C., who was a student at A&T College, who decided one day while downtown that he'd like to have a cup of coffee. And he decided that he'd go into a drugstore that had been, as far as he could remember, and probably as far as any of his parents or grandparents could remember, it was strictly taboo as far as the lunch counter was concerned. This particular young man decided that he would go in and sit down and order a cup of coffee, and he did. He was refused. Then and there, he decided that something could and should be done about this particular thing. And one of the best ways to do this, he decided, was through a nonviolent, peaceful means. The weapons of violence are quite obvious. I think that any intelligent individual can realize this, that you can fight a weapon of violence. The weapons of nonviolence are not so obvious, and it becomes very difficult to cope with them. The reasons for requesting a cup of coffee were not because the individual desired a cup of coffee so much, for I'm sure that if he had gone back to the dormitory or gone back to the campus, he could have very easily got a cup of coffee without any trouble at all. After the movement began, it became quite obvious that the argument, the sit-in movement, the demonstrations were not for cups of coffee, but were for all the other facets of life that individuals have to come in contact with daily. I think that this too has been visualized in a wrong sense. 9 times out of 10, if the students in the southern schools were served coffee anytime they wanted to be served at these lunch counters, they would never bother about buying it. But I think that they visualized that there had to be a starting point, and this was just as good a starting point as any. With a demand for a cup of coffee at a lunch counter that was strictly taboo, from an individual who had always remained on top and subjected his fellow man, the Negro, to all sorts of discriminatory ideas and concepts. This immediately became a challenge to explore all the other facets of life, employment, education, and everything else that you want to name. This then,
hey y'all, you just been listening to the voice of Malcolm X. It's from a talk he did back in 1961 called Black Muslims versus Sit-ins. Malcolm X was assassinated back in 1965 on the 21st of February. So it's been a little over a year. I mean, it's been over a little over like 30 years since he was viciously assassinated in front of his family, his children, and his supporters out there in New York City.
And we thought it appropriate to play a little bit of Malcolm today because of it is Black History Month.
And basically, every day should be Black History Day for what this country has done, not only to the hundreds of millions of Africans who were kidnapped against their will and brought over here into other areas on this continent against their will and forced into slavery, but for the horrendous economic and other policies that United States government is doing in Africa today. The whole continent of Africa is under the thumb of the U.S. government. The economic situation, the development situation of Africa is really, really serious.
The theme of today's coordinated broadcast with Critical Mass Radio New Network is race, land, and housing in the Americas. And, a lot of the words of Malcolm, some of the other speakers we're going to hear from this afternoon, make some of the connections between some broader issues in terms of war and foreign policy, corporate rules, things like that, but bring it down to, you know, the neighborhood with just your land and your housing situation, environmental racism, and, what kind of control we have over our own housing, our own abilities to house ourselves, our own housing situations, and the land that we live on and the land that we get support from and get our food and get our water from.
Throughout the Bay Area, they're taking Section 8 away, which is forcing even more families, women and children out into the streets. And of course, Black people and brown people are facing the most discrimination regarding that.
So we're going to move on a little bit here, caller, wait just a moment, to some talk from Ward Churchill on the Critical Mass Radio Network.
Well, basically, this is aimed at social strata. The WOGs out there who are getting discontent. The youth gangs, so-called. And some of them are. Down in Compton and other areas of South Central L.A. The Barrio Warriors and the others from East L.A., Ladino gangs, and so forth. These are pretty broad-based, and they're not especially politicized. They're simply rejective of the particular slot that has been socially and economically assigned them. They're making too much money, and they're doing it in ways that are not approved, and therefore they become targeted, but they become targeted in a sort of across-the-board manner. What happens now when somebody steps up and says, your social discontent, your resistance to towing the line, your refusal to accept the lot that's been assigned you is commendable, but you're going about it in the wrong way. What you need to be about is not personal enrichment, but changing the situation, not only for yourself, but everyone like you. What happens when someone steps into the street gang milieu we just described in Los Angeles, or that we could describe as the Peace Stone Nation. That's what it used to be called. It's now El Rucan in Chicago, or with the Young Lords organization in New York, or any of about 500 others that we could name in major cities. What happens when someone steps into that milieu and is able to articulate a politics of transformation and resistance that they are able to understand and respond to and begin to galvanize them into not social criminal, but rather tangibly political activity? Now, you just change the rules of the game and you change the nature of the response correspondingly. Instead of having essentially criminal profiteers functioning under the mantle of police in order to maintain a certain level of passivity over the population in this area, you get very highly developed and coordinated counterinsurgency programs that are directed against him. The organizations that have been getting beat up, the membership getting beat up, occasionally assassinated for profit, are redefined in another way and are targeted in a much more intensive fashion. Not simply across the board, but very, very selectively. The individuals who are capable of affecting the galvanization we're talking about are especially targeted. Where do you intersect with Indian resistance? Just about any place you encounter Indians, because in one way or another, almost any Indian you encounter is likely to be engaged in resistance of some sort. But there's so much you can almost pick and choose. You can pick and choose things that are close to you. You can pick, for example, New Segovia, Western Shoshone, just across the mountains there in Nevada, a rather large area of Nevada, almost all of Nevada, and a little bit of California too, I might add, which was never ceded by the original people. They're struggling to hang on to it. New Segovia, the most bombed nation on earth. Every nuclear test conducted within the United States.